Welcome to the commentary track to The Descent. We are not accompanied by Mike Schultz, and we are not drunk this time, so this will be a little different. This is the time you should press play on the count of three. One, two, three. This is the third time we've seen this movie, and it's the kind of horror movie that we actually like, as opposed to horror movies that people actually see and like.
Well, there's plenty of slashing, it's just different.
Yes. How is it different?
Because it's not the point.
What would you use as an example of something where the slashing is the point?
All the Friday the 13th stuff, that kind of thing.
You're dating yourself.
I know, I'm old. That shouldn't be a shock to anybody. The point of that is the blood, the guts, the gore, the terror of that versus something infinitely more frightening, like being claustrophobic. You're going to ask me something?
Had you heard of the movie before I put it on the Netflix list?
Yes, I think from a girl power kind of perspective. I think when I talked about it with one of my coworkers, she said, oh, that's the movie with when those chicks go caving. And I think I understood it from that same perspective. I knew it to be a horror movie, and I knew it was primarily women.
Did you have a sense of what the nature of the horror was?
No, not at all.
Did
I think there were monsters? Did I think it was psychological? I don't know. I didn't think any of that. Chicks in caves. That's what I got.
Were you surprised by the nature of the horror as it developed?
Yes and no. I think I was surprised at how unimportant the monsters seemed in the grand scheme of what's really scary. Maybe it's being a Buffy junkie, but monsters are beatable. That's not the issue. Somebody always survives the monsters, but.
But that's an interesting point, because in a lot of horror movies, the monsters aren't beatable, or they're not. If there's a weakness in the monsters, it is it's not something that's readily apparent, that it's something that, the monster in Alien, for instance, I think, which this movie clearly resembles in a lot of ways, isn't easily defeatable. And I think that's different here, and I think the Buffy comparison's kind of interesting because those ugly CGI vampires do the little disintegrating all the time. And these monsters are similarly fallible.
And the point of Buffy is the monsters are always beatable. I mean, there's no monster. You know at the end of each season that whatever the big bad was, it's going to be dusted.
To just switch a little, what do you think of this opening, the whole opening sequence?
Well, I read somewhere that it said something like it begins with a bang in the first 4 minutes and never lets up. Are you asking about before
the awful
thing that happens? Or
I'm asking up to this point and up to right here where things go through people's heads.
And you know, when we first watched this, I'd forgotten they were... I'd forgotten he was in the right side driving, and thought, well, she got skewered? That was fast. So I'd forgotten that he would be driving and he would be dead there. I'm sorry, I forgot the question. I was horrified by the skewering.
The opening where they're doing the rafting there are things that are set up there, but...
That was very telegraphed to me. I understood what was going on immediately with the husband and... Is that what
right.
you're asking me?
No, I'm asking, I think, like, with this and the Mothman prophecies, the openings are the, are both, in both cases, really clunky, and they're necessary, and luckily this one's very short. Well, it's kind of is and kind of isn't. I mean, that, this movie doesn't get going for a good 20 minutes. The Mothman prophecies, I think, is a similar problem, where it has a difficulty of kind of getting the move on.
Well, I disagree with the idea that it gets started with a bang and never lets up. Because I think there are, you think you're probably right, there are moments that, that drag or that are...
I think they're just a little clunky.
Okay.
This is a, I really like this sequence. I like its kineticism.
You said you weren't drunk.
I like that switch from dream to waking right there. That I think that's very good. But it also establishes in her a tendency while conscious to be in a different sort of an altered state.
What do you make of all those people just walking around? Like, they seem shockingly unaffected by this scene going on. The gurney goes by.
I think it's a movie. And it's one of those things that's in a movie rather than...
Nobody comes running when she unhooks her monitors.
I suppose. one thing that...
I'm the one who's easily suspending her disbelief around here.
Jim Emerson, who's the editor of Roger Ebert's website... has gone to great pains showing some examples of where The Descent borrows from other movies. In this case, the helicopter shots recall very obviously The Shining.
We said that, I assume, before you even read it.
I'd read it before I'd seen the movie, so maybe that stuck in my memory. But certainly there's that, and there's also the added, I think, importance of those images is that those trees look like... Which was it, stalactites or mites?
Stalagmites come up from the ground.
Okay.
Stalactites hang tight from the ceiling, since you don't like my pantyhose.
I can't, I'll never remember that anyway.
You'll have to stay right with me.
He also notes, among other things, like the piercing of the of that sign and how that piercing is a consistent theme. You know, obviously there's the impaling of the opening, but the holes that were in that sign... and the stalagmites imagery, the imagery there, and the you were talking about the in the hospital. We were talking about how she sort of lives in another place even when she's conscious, and the really bizarre thing, I think, about this movie is if you saw it in the movie theater in the United States, you saw a radically different movie in which that is not a really, that's not a, that issue isn't important at all because the ending is different, and we'll talk about that a little more as we get to that. But that's very carefully set up here, and then it kind of just gets chucked for the American version, which is...
Which is a shame, because I think at the end of the day, what woke me up and kept me up the first time we saw this was that ending. And I don't know that it would have had that impact had it been different.
Well, the ending, as it was in the American theaters, was really conventional for a horror movie.
Right.
You've seen it pretty much, it's the end of every horror movie you've seen in the last, well, since Friday the 13th, I think, probably. Or actually, probably since Carrie, which is where that, I think that... that comes from, that gotcha
you're
ending.
Giving it away already.
Yeah, but that's not the real ending.
I know.
Why is it important that it's chicks, that it's six women? As part of the marketing, there was the, it recalled the Salvador Dali, I think, photograph and then painting of nude women forming a skull.
I don't remember. I don't know that I ever either saw it that closely or or saw it at all, because I'm not sure that I'm sure I would have remembered that. Why do I think it's important?
I guess we'll start with, do you?
It's hard to imagine it either with guys or with a mixed group. Because I think the dynamic changes, certainly the dynamic changes if it's mixed, because then there's this convention of women relying on men and men falling apart and women having to pick it all up. And, you know, there's stuff that happens that you just expect when it's a mixed group. And with men, I get in trouble throughout sisterhood, but it's hard to imagine guys pulling the switch on the cave system. Now, I've given something away, but it's hard to imagine that
pulling
happening.
Pulling the switch, what's the term mean?
When they all agree they're going down
in this
system and they end up in another.
Do you think that is... only credible? I mean, one thing you have to say is that there really aren't any. There's a half a character and a quarter character, and that's about it in terms of the writing.
You think?
Yeah, I think the lead is
Sarah. I think
Sarah counts as a half, and I think Juno counts as a quarter.
Wow, I would have given Sarah more credit than that.
Okay, fair enough. But my point is we're dealing with. I mean, it's a wind-up toy of a movie, pretty much, and there aren't a whole lot of important... There's not a lot of character going on, but...
Plenty of caricature, but...
Yes. But do you think it would be only credible what Juno does as a woman doing that?
Like I said, I'm going to get into trouble with the sisterhood for this, but... It strikes me as absolutely the worst violation of trust that you could imagine. Because she's taking all of their lives into her hands without telling them. And that just is...
But men aren't capable of that?
I certainly think they're capable. I think it plays out more legitimately with women. I don't know why. I can't put a finger on that. But that's one of the things that I think is important. I also think that there's an intimacy that develops. I think there's a point at which you're not entirely sure. I can't remember which character it is. There's kind of an intimation that one of them is a lesbian. Not that that matters at all, but it's something that would come up more likely in a group of women than in men.
Do you think using women is a way to essentially establish an intimacy without having to actually establish the intimacy on a narrative level? That we assume that that's just the way women are, and so we believe it so they can get through it a little more quickly?
I think you don't have to explain as much about why they're all there together. I think you can assume that this is a group of girlfriends who've been friends forever, and that women come and go as a part of that group, and that's also accepted. I think when you have a group of guys, you probably do have to say that they were fraternity brothers, or they were whatever their connection is. You have to explain that, and it's really not necessary ever in the story, but it's certainly not necessary when you have women that you just already know.
Another effect of that is that it makes it less specific.
Ugh, that's just horrifying.
Is that like three different levels of dream? I mean, it's like a dream within a dream right there, wasn't it?
No, I don't think so. She wakes up.
There's that jump cut.
She wakes up into a dream, which certainly has happened to me. I get that. I've never been skewered in my dream, mercifully.
But to get back to, if you don't create a specific context for that friendship, then it becomes more easily relatable. It becomes more universal.
Right. That's probably true. And it's easier to do that with women.
Which was interesting. Which is interesting in the context of Touching the Void, which I think this movie also resembles, and I think is in some ways modeled after, which is shit goes down and then shit gets worse. But that's a movie where you're completely devoid of context of the two people who are climbing a mountain in that case rather than descending a cave. And so you don't really, and of course here's a Psycho reference.
An unsubtle one.
But that's a... We'll talk a little more about that, but does it bother you? I mean, where it borrows from other movies, it borrows blatantly.
Okay.
You could argue it steals. I mean, in the case of that Psycho reference, it's a joke.
Right.
But in other cases, I mean, it's deadly serious. I mean, there's a... especially near the end, it's almost like it's drawing on your memories of other movies, and it wants you to recognize that what it's doing, what it's drawing from. You're looking at me funny, like,
yeah.
Crazy. This section isn't as long and as dull as I thought it was. It gets through it pretty quickly.
This reminds me of something too, but I don't know what. I know I've said that it reminds me of the cabin in the American The Ring.
Also Evil Dead.
Yeah.
Or Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
These God's eye view shots, I mean, they're fairly standard and they're used for, foreboding and to diminish the size of what's being shown on the ground. But they're, in horror movies, and I think you see it in Mothman Prophecy sometimes too, it's almost as if you're ascribing what is going to happen to them to God.
Hmm. I don't get that, but, I mean, I understand it, it's not something that is evident to me.
I think and that's clearly the helicopter shots from The Shining. A little bit with Sarah driving kind of out of control suggests he has a little bit of a death wish to me. Hmm. Do you feel the movie's derivative? Hopelessly derivative?
I don't. I don't, actually, even though it steals from so much.
So what do you call it, then? Because there's a fine line between being a knockoff of something or some things and being something that's an homage and legitimately something on its own. It is using reference points and motifs and... What's the difference, and how do you differentiate?
I think at the end of everything, it still manages to be terrifying, independent of. Ooh, that reminds me of The Shining. Ooh, that reminds me of Psycho. Ooh, that reminds me of Alien. And there's still. When it's really, really frightening, it's very original. It doesn't rely on cheap.
So something like Slither, which existed primarily, which only makes sense, I think, at least for me, in the context of its references.
Speaking of Buffy, the sheriff was the big bad.
Okay. Jim Emerson will tell you that we've recently seen an homage to Picnic at Hanging Rock, which is where this brings in. Yes, it's one of those things where, because of the commentary, we can't go back, but there's this look of wonder that sort of mimics something from Picnic at Hanging Rock, and there's a sort of the obscure side of this movie. And, of course, that's an important little bit, hallucinations, visual and oral.
Deterioration, right. Yes. They run down all the list of horrible things that can happen to you in the cave and how you can ascribe really bad, bad things, or how you can ascribe the bad things that happen to these psychological things rather than the reality. I think I'd be very uneasy about this whole thing, and nobody seems as bothered by it as I think I might be.
By the dead animal?
Yeah.
What's disquieting to you about it? I mean, is it clear that it's been mauled?
To me, yeah. I mean, it doesn't look like a natural death to me. I mean, I don't want to say an unnatural death, but it doesn't look... And maybe it's just in the context of this movie, but...
Clearly, there's the later it's implied that what we eventually encounter down in the cave was responsible for that.
And it's not obvious here. I mean, I think it's just as likely that I would think, bear, cougar, whatever, but it doesn't change the fact that I'm still out there with whatever did that. And that thing is a lot bigger than I am. And I'd really be questioning Juno's judgment at this point. I know we're all pals and we all go on these exciting adventure vacations together, but they really do let this go, even when one of the characters says, "I'm an English teacher."
One of the ingenious things, I think, to me, the movie that's most closely resembles is Alien. And I think it certainly draws from the template of Ripley in the sense of the strong women, a strong women-centered story. But the brilliance of Alien is that once the alien gets on board, there's essentially no escape from it because it's, you're in the middle of space. And here, once you get down in the cave, if you encounter anything that lives down there, you're at a serious disadvantage and
out of your element.
Out of your element, and there's really no way you can backtrack in these caves, and in this cave in particular. And so I called it a wind-up toy earlier, and I think that's a horror movie, and I think this is as much actually a terror movie as a horror movie, but.
What distinction are you making?
I think terror is the visceral being chased, being hunted, whereas the horror is tends to be a little more in the bottom of the gut, a little less about fright, and a lot more about.
Panic?
Not really panic. I'm thinking there's an element of... I'm trying to think of a good... foreshadowing. I'm trying to think of a good pure terror movie and a good pure horror movie. I think that a terror movie is... I'll start with a horror movie. I think Rosemary's Baby is a great horror movie because it's not really about terror. There's no... Nobody's ever chasing her. But she's in a...
That creepy couple. Ruth
Gordon.
Stalk.
The devil who had sex with her. But she's trapped, but not in a running around. She's in a situation she can't escape, and there's horrific things that have been done to her, and she's in a horrific situation. But she's not... More foreshadowing?
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking, I don't recall even the first two times being as struck by that.
No, this is not a subtle movie, by any means. It pretty much and it's, and in fairness, it's good storytelling to not surprise you with things, you know, to not pull something out of your ass at the end and say, look, I've got this weapon. You've seen
everything you're going to see.
You've everything. You have an opportunity to see everything that's important.
Yes. The guidebook, the axe, the
guidebook, and the way she kind of discards it, and
the pendant.
Yes, that she's been playing with, and seeing her with the husband at the outset. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a mix of horror and terror. The horror is the state of that family. The terror is being chased by them.
By them and their chainsaws.
Yes. But the horror element is the twisted psychology and what that family has become. And the terror is something separate from that. I'm not a big fan of James Cameron, but I'm guessing that there are several references to The Abyss in this.
At the risk of embarrassing myself, aside from the end, which I hate, I like The Abyss a lot. And I don't see it.
Okay.
Maybe I'm just forgetting, because I haven't seen it in 10 years, probably. But there's your mixed group trapped underground.
Is that Bill Paxton or Bill Pullman?
Neither. It's Ed Harris, I think.
Ah, same shit. Ed Harris, Bill Paxton. I always confuse those two.
And Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio.
I think the director does a really nice job providing visual variety in a very difficult environment. I mean, there would be an opportunity for... It would be very easy to make this movie... and not have their, not put much to look at in it. But I think he does a good job with the flares and the different types of lighting that the women have.
Is this the first time you hear the giggling?
I think we just did, since we have the sound kind of down and the closed captioning wasn't very helpful, but she seemed to be peering and wondering, and she's got that look. And the giggling, of course, is reminiscent of...
Don't Look Now.
Don't Look Now. At this point, the first time you saw the movie, what did you think of it?
It wasn't absolutely... The stuff with the husband was clear to me. But I didn't get at all, until it was spelled out, that they weren't in the right cave. Or that they weren't in the planned cave. I didn't get that. And so, I'm still just going along. Not knowing that it's really going to get... I mean, knowing intellectually it's going to get really bleak pretty quick. But the horror part of it for me hadn't really kicked in, because it still seemed... It still seemed safe to me in a way that it seemed safe to the characters who hadn't yet figured out they were in the wrong place.
Didn't you get the sense... I didn't get the hints that they were in the wrong cave. But I certainly thought, well, if this is this boring cave that they've written tour books about, there are going to be a whole bunch of people crawling over it and lots of signs of human beings. And this looked to me like a virgin cave. And I think I had a sense from that something was a little amiss.
I sort of took that as, because she says, might as well be handrails in a gift shop. I sort of took that to mean we're all so tough and we do these adventure vacations that even this is boring.
No, I actually think those well-traveled caves do have handrails. I've been in them.
Oh, absolutely. No, but she was saying might as well have because, no, I've been to Merrimack Caverns.
I think I have too.
I'm sure you have. Family in St. Louis, you have. Although I had to beg when I was a kid to go. My parents finally took me. I sort of thought that this was just their kind of ennui about what was extreme to them.
The pure terror movie would be Jaws.
I don't know. I think this is pretty damn terrifying right here. Oof.
But I'm saying, if Rosemary's Baby is my horror movie, Jaws is my terror movie, and the fusion of the two is Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I'm not quite as pained by this time, but it is just... And I will get pained as it goes along.
This is where I thought it was... You talk about the monsters not having much of an effect, but I think it's like a two-step process. The first thing is the claustrophobia and the being trapped. And then once that trap has been... sprung... it's at that point that that the monsters, and if you haven't seen the movie, they're monsters, by the way.
But although we hope you're not just listening to us.
Although they don't show up for an hour into the movie. So, but the monsters wouldn't work if you hadn't already trapped them, essentially. Because they're really not very frightening. I mean, they're they look a little like Bat Boy from the Weekly World News.
I think even until the confession that there aren't two other ways out of there, I'm distressed by the claustrophobia, no question. And I can barely watch this even now, especially Sarah coming through. But
there's a nice little visual touch with the dust too. The idea that you can almost taste it, and it's not when you're. It's not that you're stuck. It's that you know you're breathing this dirt, and that you that you can't breathe. In addition to,
I'm definitely not one who can do claustrophobic situations. I'm very uncomfortable, to the point of panic. I can totally see how this could happen. And then for it to turn out as it does, even in this sequence, is just... I'd be the girl who'd just lie down and die. It'd be sad.
I think this really establishes her fragility, and I think it's probably...
You think?
You being facetious?
No, I'm not. I think she's tough as nails.
And I know how to pronounce facetious, by the way. It's just the way we pronounce things in our house.
No, I think she's being tough as nails, and maybe it's because of my own feeling that I would seriously never... I would not be able to survive this, I don't think.
She would have happily... stayed there and died there, I think.
And that's why I think to get out of it is extraordinary.
But I think without somebody helping her, she would have died right there and would have been content to... She would have given up very quickly. And I think this is sort of the pit for her because she's required to become a stronger person.
You know? Well, and there's that speech right there where she says, the worst thing that could possibly ever... have happened to you. Your kid's dead. Your husband's dead. What's left? Come on. And in case you don't have the closed captioning on, you tickle its citrus.
I don't get it.
I know. Oh, God. I think that's when I just lost it the first time. So then those rocks shift and you think, oh. No, I understand that she would have been content, but the fact that she chooses to go forward.
There's the rope bag. Yes, you saw the dust. You saw the rope bag was closer to the foreground.
And the rope bag got through?
No, they didn't get the rope bag. It was, they should have left behind.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Now, if you saw this in American theaters...
That makes no sense to you.
You'll wonder why there's the fucking birthday cake. Because it's a motif that's kind of... It keeps being repeated. And then it just gets dropped.
And you're really angry about that.
I am. It's in the supplementary materials, the director tells you that there's only one place in the world that got that ending. And it was the United States. And it is clearly something, I mean, it's explicit that they did that it tested better in the United States, the ending they use. Which is in this version of the movie, but the movie ends more quickly in the United States version. And so it's not a different ending, it's sort of just a continuation. But
we're being all coy, but my guess is anybody listening has seen it once already.
We'll talk about it more later.
I know, I'm not suggesting we give it away, just...
And here's your revelation.
And I was genuinely surprised by this, and really angry. I think going from that true terror in my mind, or true horror, I guess, and to use your distinction, to go from the horror of nearly being crushed, being claustrophobic, being totally freaked out, to this revelation that now you are screwed.
That I think it was terror being almost being crushed.
Okay. The horror of the claustrophobia and the terror of the crushing?
I think both are terror type things.
Really?
Yeah. Because
horror strikes me as more a psychological place than...
I think the
claustrophobia strikes me as more psychological than the actual weight of the boulders.
I guess maybe terror would be defined as a sense of imminent impending danger or peril.
We all lost something in that crash.
It's not written subtly, and I think there's a... No, it's not subtly written. Yes, I am angry about that, because about the ending. I think... whatever you think of this movie, is if you think it's clunky, or you think it's dumb, or you think it's just stealing from other movies, there's...
Or that it woke you up in the middle of the night and kept you up for 3 hours.
Yes. There's an integrity to the narrative... as it was released around the world, that it's essentially, you know, it's essentially cutting the balls off it, what was done for the American version. And it has no integrity. And obviously, if you're a film director and you don't have Final Cut, it's not your choice. But the movie executives saw fit to... mangle this movie is just baffling to me.
Do you get a sense that they're being watched there?
Well, it's a good point because the angle suggests a point of view. Of course, they can't be being, they're not being watched.
Well, yes, that's true. But we don't know that at this point.
You know, if you know things about... I mean, if you know anything about evolution, you're going to figure out fairly quickly... That whatever they encounter down there can't see, but...
Doesn't need to.
Certainly, even just that, using a shot of from a perspective that's...
And it's not just straight down. It's not from the bottom. It's from an angle that's
right.
Off...
It's... You can create that feeling without ever technically implying it. I mean, it's just a shot.
Right.
You're telling
the
story.
But it has these nice rounded edges, and that could just be our... See, I mean, there it is again.
That's the darkness and the rendering of black on digital media, basically. This sequence is really interesting to me, first of all, because it so clearly recalls sort of the wordless exposition of touching the void, of how you do things when you're caving or climbing in this case. And they don't explain, well, now I'm going to do this, and this is...
The perfect opportunity to say spelunking, and you walked away from it.
Sorry.
It's okay. Well, and haven't we talked in two different forums about the fact that you can't do this, the fact that you cannot sporch body weight?
I think you've argued that, and I think maybe...
No, I didn't. John did.
Okay. And this would be our friend who watched it with us.
Retired Navy friend.
New Year's Eve.
Who might not be our friend anymore after we did that to him.
There is a...
But I think it came up in the touching point discussion,
There's something, again, unsubtle, tells you what you need to know, that this isn't... They aren't the first ones here.
Right. And that it's been a long damn time because nobody uses that stuff anymore. I mean, and they even do that before they explain it, because she's got these schmancy...
Yeah. And it looks old and it's a little rusty.
Right, but she's got these schmancy high-tech clip thingies that... stick into the rock and...
I mean, there's a natural suspense of doing this sort of activity, because the strength required and the obvious pain that's involved. It's just great for a horror movie, because you don't have to jack something up artificially or use, you know, the cat jumping out of the darkness that you were...
Or the bats flying out of the...
Well, yes, well, they did that, but... And that was one of two obvious instances of CGI in this movie, and they're both bad. And that argue both unnecessary.
Yeah, I don't think you need that. I agree.
I don't think you need the second one either. I understand the second one a little more than I understand the bats.
It's just to give you a good jolt.
But this isn't much of a jolt movie. It's situational. It's situational terror or horror, however you want to cast it. It's situational rather than there's something lurking over your shoulder for the most part. I mean, there's some of that too. And of course, the unknown is always a great source of horror.
Fear. We'll just call it that. Be done with it.
I think I've seen Juno playing billiards on ESPN2. That was sort of an inside joke. Sorry. Pretty soon you get to hear, you kind of got a sense of it with the impaling earlier, but pretty soon you'll get the, you'll hear that the person in charge of the sound design made his or her money.
Ugh.
With crunches of skulls.
Oh, I was just thinking about the way the line zips through her.
There's that too.
Hands and oof.
I'm thinking of the crunching of skulls.
Oh, when they get across and start walking.
Yeah, when she slips.
Oh, when she thuds.
Yep.
Got it.
Having been a failure at the president's physical fitness test in grade school, I find this whole section to be...
intimidating?
Yes.
I think I climbed the rope. I actually accomplished the rope climb, but...
I think I completed the shuttle run.
Did you use erasers?
Yes, of course. There we go.
No, not quite. Here's your thud. We know we have a soon-to-be medical school graduate in the bunch. Because for all your complaints about clumsy exposition, I thought that was done nicely.
What was the exposition there? What was the information that was given her house?
In the cabin, they were talking about her almost graduating. That's very subtle, I thought.
From what?
From medical school.
Do they say medical school?
Or? Yes. Okay. Soon to be doctor or something like that in the very beginning.
I guess I'm not sure it's clumsy. It's not elegant and it's not subtle.
No, I just meant your general irritation with clumsy exposition, not...
Yes.
Not in this particular setting.
And I think it was at this point that I was pretty sure it was a monster movie.
You didn't know either?
From what I read, because it's mostly in reviews, most of the things I had read hinted at it. I think they generally didn't give away that element of it. And at this point you're wondering, well, I know it's about a 90-minute movie, and we're 46 and a half minutes into it, and we ain't seen shit in terms of monster. And I wondered if maybe I had just misunderstood, and that this was simply not unlike, say, Deliverance, which, of course, it also references being in the Appalachians. I wondered if it might not be a completely devoid of the supernatural or the fantastic. And I like that at this point you've got to be wondering that, because like Jaws, it withholds and teases a lot.
I just thought those were foothills when I was looking at the cave painting, but I'm clearly not a cave painting interpreter like Beth. This was very hopeful to me. I thought, oh, thank God. It felt like it had taken a good turn at this moment for me. It didn't feel...
Yeah, there was your first...
47.
There's your first sign of something amiss. It says, well, somebody lived here probably a long time ago and lived here with enough time to make drawings on paintings, on caves. Jim Emerson has also made the interesting point that arguably... this is the very title suggests it, but there's that these women are all dead before the end of the cave. They're in Hades. I mean, you're going underground.
This is horrible too. I'm gonna talk about sound designer making his money.
And they're going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. Oh. There it is.
Yeah. I don't buy that.
Another obvious reference to Touching the Void.
Yeah.
And which, if you haven't seen it, is a kind of a hybrid documentary and recreation of two men who climbed a mountain and ran out of fuel, ran out of food, had a broken leg. One cut the other one, cut the rope and made the other one fall down into a crevasse.
Now you're giving away all the secrets of Touching the Void. Jeez.
Spoiler alert.
It's too late now.
Nobody's seen it. Nobody wants to. And of course, there's the...
Oh, God.
It's not gore. That's not gory. I mean, it's disgusting.
But it's not good, even disgusting. But it's so evocative. You know. I mean, you don't know what that feels like. At least I hope you don't. But you know that it hurts.
It's very effective. I mean, there are ways to do that. You know, for instance, there are ways to do it, like to actually show it breaking, and you see the limb,
CSI-like.
And it's bare, and it breaks, and you see the bone stick through. There are ways to be revolting, but I think it's more effective when you're sitting there, and you're not moving, and you're just looking at the bone sticking through your leg. I just think it's one of those really smart choices.
That's even subtle. Juno, give me one of your axes.
I think we just heard
our giggle again.
I'm just thinking, I really do hate the bats and the way they're executed. But of course, the bats are marginally important.
Why?
Because the monsters hunt like bats do.
Okay.
I still think you could easily do without it. Of course, there's something that's, again, the suggestion of something that's not real clear what it is at that point.
Except it's really, really old.
No, there was a shot of her, and you saw something moving in the foreground, and you didn't get a clear view of it.
Oh, man. That's when you hear the click for the first time, I think.
Yep. What does that sound remind you of?
I know, but it's not coming to me.
Here's your first view. So that's at the 52-minute mark where you first see and have any sense of what we're dealing with.
You first see anything at all. I don't know that you know at all yet.
No, but you know it's not.
How much trouble they're going to be.
Yes.
And now I've just given away there's more than one.
We remember at this point the hallucinations as one possible.
Right. Visual and oral.
And we already know she hallucinates orally. A-U-R.
Yes.
At this point, I think you could reasonably get a little disappointed that there's a monster because you think it's just going to degenerate, and I think it does a really good job of and it sounds like faint praise, of not degenerating.
No, because I understand. I know that I've said I think the monsters are secondary. I might have even said it tonight.
You did.
But... They don't feel like they're just place fillers either.
Why don't you buy the Hades thing? I mean, visually, near the end, easily read as emerging from the grave.
but it just, I don't buy.
Not like, not as in they're already dead, but the
well,
idea.
Well, I think that's how you started. So, and I guess that's where I'm starting from, is that before they even clip on the ropes, you're saying they're all dead.
I guess let's look at it less as being dead and going to hell, but maybe Hades and the mythical place where I don't think you had, you know, the underworld, essentially. Where I don't think, well, if you went to Hades in mythological terms, you weren't dead, were you, necessarily? The living also went to Hades sometimes, right? Visited?
I don't know. Embarrass myself with my limited mythology. But I don't think generally you did. And you paid the guy to ferry you across the River Styx and off you went.
Of course, it's never good to be have a gimpy person with you when you're underground and stuck in a cave. It slows you down. I think at this point you know that they're fucked.
Maybe it's my Pollyanna-ishness.
Blair Witch.
Yes.
No, that's a good...
5637.
And yet there's no... It's clear that it's not benevolent, and the dead animals aren't a good sign.
You don't think it's obviously malevolent?
At this point, it's scurried away twice.
That's true.
It has not attacked. Oh, it reminds me, the monster reminds me of Nosferatu.
Mm-hmm.
I really love that the monsters, save for one shot, are people in monster costumes. There's something very tactile about them that you cannot replicate with computer-generated imagery. There's a substance to them. There's a reality to them that's missing in a lot of horror movies that rely on CGI.
But because I just can't seem to stop bringing up Buffy, you give them shit all the time about guys in the rubber suits.
Okay.
What's the difference?
They're malevolent.
Okay, now you know they're malevolent. You're willing to go with malevolent. I know the production values are crap, but...
The production values go a long way. The makeup here is... I mean, obviously when you're in shadow and you're dealing with... cinematic lighting versus television lighting, and you're not doing these fake dance / karate moves. I mean, there's another thud. I mean, there's a pervasive fakery. And we've talked about, you know, the visceral, you know, when that bone was sticking out.
Uh-huh.
There's, I think I think there's almost a sympathetic terror in the audience that's missing from Buffy. I mean, Buffy's always at arm's length with irony, right?
Yeah, there's plenty of irony, yes.
Here...
But there's...
Every thud, every time... I mean, you're experiencing what these people are experiencing in your gut, I think. And sometimes physically. Really like that that this creature is purely mortal. That there's nothing That creature, of course, is mortal as well.
Oh, I think that's... That is the second worst
impaling,
moment.
Impaling again.
That, for me, is the second worst moment in this movie.
And it's completely... It's played fairly.
Absolutely.
You are so with Juno as she's defending herself. And although it plays out in interesting ways, in issues of trust and things of that nature and betrayal, Juno didn't do anything wrong there.
No. And there's nobody in the world who could say that that wouldn't have happened to them.
Right. Or that they wouldn't have done the same thing in that situation.
Right.
And yet, of course, Juno ends up being a villain in a sense.
Well, she's been the villain already in my mind, because she brought them down there and lied to them about what they're doing. Put them all in this kind of danger that wasn't anticipated as part of their extreme vacation. So, I think she's dangerous before that moment.
She's dangerous, but she's not...
I think she's evil before that moment.
I don't think she's ever evil.
I cannot get past... And she flat out lies. Early on, she says, that's why I don't trust guidebooks. Because you can't get a good sense of the caves. And she flat out lies. She knows that she's told them. She's bullshitted them. Is there any actual dialogue there?
With what?
Do we hear the child say that?
Yes.
Okay. As angry as you are about the ending, that's how angry I am about the betrayal and the danger. That's how I feel about Juno.
Do you feel like you being a woman might have something to do with the way you feel about that? You know, being hysterical and shit.
Yeah, because that's, you know, how we all are.
Yeah, hysterectomy, hysterical.
You're still bitter about getting beat up by that psychologist chick.
Yeah, well.
That suggests fresh meat.
Yes. Clearly he's not decomposed.
No. Do I think that being a woman...
Do you maybe take it a little more personally, Juno's betrayal?
I don't think it's that.
Because I've never... I don't...
I can't imagine not being angry.
I understand what you're saying. But at the same time, I can't relate to it. I can't relate to it because I don't feel the same way about it. I don't feel nearly as strongly about... Juno. I think it's an interesting sort of reversal in that she's... And here's where you get a sense that, okay, we're not probably just dealing with the one that we saw get killed, and we're not dealing with two or three or four.
There's a pack of them.
Yeah. And that's done mostly through, by implication, rather than showing you 100 of 150 of them.
I don't know if it's my being a woman that makes me so angry at Juno. I think because fundamentally I would trust, in a group like that, I would trust the other members of the group not to lie to me. Certainly not to lie to me about something as serious as that.
I'm not denying that she betrays them. I mean, obviously she betrays Sarah in other ways as well.
Right.
A long time ago.
But even that doesn't bother me as much as lying to them about where they're going. That has a reckless quality arrogance.
I agree with you. and yet...
Would I be as angry if she were a guy? Probably not.
Because you expect that shit.
Exactly.
It's really nice. Shooting this stuff through a video camera gives it a rough texture, and then having just the hint of what you're seeing, of, you never get a good look at it, but it's not done to obscure it.
I think it probably has everything to do with the fact that I have an expectation of women that I don't necessarily have of men. That's awful to say. It really is awful, and I feel bad about it.
But it's interesting.
But it's truth.
It's really interesting, the choice of having six women. I mean, that's not just something that just happens in the screenwriting process. I mean, there's a reason for that, and I think... what the filmmakers have done is and it's the writer director is really tapped into that, the things you're talking about. Of course, this is the Body Snatchers in all its forms with the screaming. In addition to being the watch that you saw earlier becomes important here.
Right.
In case you hadn't figured out that it was going to be important based on the prominence and its... And here the filmmakers are circumscribing the monsters. They're telling you what their weaknesses are. And they're suggesting... I mean, you've already seen them... You've already seen one get killed... you're establishing and reinforcing that they're not omnipotent or that they're not super powerful. They
can be killed and they have a serious weakness.
Yes. Which gives you hope.
Mm-hmm. Bastards.
And of course there's that arrow pointing the way out. I mean...
Which is not nearly as funny as the exit sign in the...
In the blooper reel.
In the not very funny blooper reel, but... exit sign is one moment that's very funny.
It's a very wise decision also to set your horror movie in a place where you never get a good look at anything in good light, where things are either by torch or the infrared camera or you know, the available light.
Take note, John Guliger.
Yes.
It is John, right?
Yes. How many people are dead at this point? Three?
We've got Juno, Sarah,
and the other one.
No, Juno and Sarah are both alive.
Yes,
Holly.
The broken leg one has been eaten.
Is Holly. Was she eaten?
Yes.
Okay.
She was the one who was devoured.
Okay, so Holly's been devoured.
One was stabbed through the neck.
Well, but... That's Holly. You've got those two alive still, Juno, Sarah.
Do Did you have any trouble following what was going on in the movie?
I didn't, and it seems amazing to me that there are issues with that.
Clearly a Boy Scout. And again, the suggestion of horrible things that have happened down there, but you don't see them...
You don't linger long enough to...
You don't have enough of a chance to really pull them in. You just know that's bad stuff you don't really want to look at very closely.
You certainly don't want to be trapped down there with.
You certainly don't want to be walking on it. At this point, what do you expect to happen? I mean, do you have any hope that there's going to be a good resolution to the movie? And I mean, not in that there's going to be a happy ending, but that, I mean, you've got to figure that everybody's going to die except for one person who's going to survive, right? What's the interest in the movie at this point? Because there's no indication it's going to be anything special.
You don't think?
I'm asking the question because it would be really easy to give up on the movie here and say, well, you know, there are like two or three things, there's some variables. Again, fallibility of the monsters right there.
Juno can just come right up and...
There's some variables, but you pretty much, you've got a pretty good sense of where things are headed at this point.
I don't know. I think there's, at this point, it still feels to me like the opportunity to showcase some badassity, snapping some necks, beating up on some folks, some skills that maybe normal people don't have, being able to, you know, cross that chasm with ropes and carabiners or whatever they're called, and, you know, get across there. And yeah, they find a way out, and there's some explanation. Or maybe there's not. I don't know.
That's a pretty low bar.
I agree with that.
And so I guess my point is I think...
But at this point, I'm still willing to say I'm invested in these people, I'm interested in what happens to them, and even if I never think of this movie again, it's been an interesting and fun way to spend 90 minutes.
And it's a short movie, so...
Yeah, and that's never bad. Well, that's not true. Open Water was a short movie that was...
Yes.
And did you know there was an Open Water 2? I was reading something recently.
This time it's personal?
Yeah, exactly. I think it was in Entertainment Weekly, where they made reference to it.
The texture of that skin is really cool.
See? Hopeful. Right here?
It's misplaced hope, because there's no reason to think that they could find an exit.
There are all these things. There are two entrances depicted in the cave paintings.
There's an arrow that says out.
Yeah, there's an arrow that says out.
These people are really... These monsters are very easy to kill.
They're easy to kill. They have to hunt. All these bones didn't just get down here in this one little hole that's now collapsed. There are all kinds of reasons I think that it is legitimate to say somebody's getting out of here. There's Beth, who we've given up for dead, but actually isn't.
I think we would call this a circumstantial case. Stay away from her. She did this to me. No, she didn't. Here, your husband cheated on you with her. Okay.
No, I think it's...
No, I think it's important because Sarah, I mean, there have already been lots of seeds of doubt. Juno didn't stay after the accident.
But that's not even, I'm just talking in terms of circumstantial. How else do you get the pendant that we know belongs to Juno? Because we've seen it several times. How do you get that?
No, I'm just, yes, I understand that. But that's a leap that has to be, the groundwork for that leap has been laid very carefully throughout.
Yes.
We keep seeing testaments to her growing strength. Obviously, this is a test when you have to put your friend down.
Mm. Has she killed any of these monsters yet?
Don't believe so.
So the first killing she does is of her friend.
It's a nice edit to essentially give her a little bit of space to do the deed. Huh. We were close, and then there was a cut to a longer shot. Gave her some privacy. And what's that show you? I mean, you see, there's a hint of it visually, but it's the sound. It's a baby.
That was squally.
It's a baby. And if there's babies...
There's pissed off mamas.
Yes. Isn't it kind of curious that with six female characters, this is confirmation, I think, what you've kind of got the maleness of the monsters up to this point? It's like a battle of the sexes. Six women being attacked by all these men.
I don't know if I would go there. I don't think it's...
Name the reference.
Carrie.
No. Well, there's that, but there's...
Here's your Carrie.
No. Apocalypse Now.
Oh. Yes.
Yeah, it's sort of a fusion of Apocalypse Now and Carrie. And blood is a symbol of fertility.
You think you're being sneaky? I'll show you sneaky, says the woman monster.
Who's more clever than the male monsters.
Yep. Movie. Here she turns into Ripley.
Movie was including in the tank top.
Yeah.
The movie was written and directed by a man, of course. Blood is a symbol of fertility. There's very much a Carrie thing going on, like you mentioned, and here she's just covered in blood. And here blood obviously equals death because this is a deep pool of blood of all the things that have been killed down here.
Is it blood, though? Do we know it's blood?
Well, we've got some decent light here, and she's clearly red. So, yes, I think it's a...
I've always thought that, but... I can't for the life of me figure out how...
I think...
And maybe it's a... Maybe it,
I think their, right, their sense of touch isn't very good either. I mean, that's the... It's certainly something that makes you go as... The CNC Music Factory would suggest it's something that makes you go, But I don't think it's beyond explanation. I think we can, you know...
Females are smart enough. There's another Ripley thing. females are smart enough to hide and...
It's just the males are stupid, right?
Boys are dumb.
I think there's really interesting reading. As I think the fact that there's an emphasis on... that the maleness of the of most of the monsters is emphasized by the presence of a female monster. I think that's important, especially when sex is clearly a conscious choice in the construction of the story. Unlike 2046, this movie is very green and very red.
And very red, yes.
Bride of Culture Snob, her assessment of 2046, which is an Asian movie of good reputation and dubiously earned, I would say. Pamela's assessment was, this movie is very green.
That was the extent of my review.
Okay, there's five or six of the 10 of them there. I think we get a sense, finally, of...
Do you think those are all still guys in suits?
I think those are, yes.
Okay.
That might have been CGI, but it was quick enough that it wasn't...
That you weren't pissed off.
I'm not pissed off about the last CGI shot.
Where did we see good CGI recently? Oh, Pan's Labyrinth.
Yes, the bug and the insect in Pan's Labyrinth. Star Wars?
Oh, I was like, no. All the CGI in Star Wars? Sucked.
No, it's the...
Got it.
Stormtroopers coming up behind you.
Yeah. You have to shoot the panel out. Earning my geek cred today. Stalactites.
Tight to the floor.
No. See, that's why I think the pantyhose thing works. Because they look like tights hanging from the ceiling. And I still don't get this, that she's certain she's going to take somebody out with her.
Well, we've seen that they can crawl on the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
I argue that she is about to sacrifice her. Pamela disagrees with me and isn't quite getting it. That she's both killing herself and helping her friends.
I mean, how in the world do you think that taking out one of them is going to make any difference?
When you have no hope, you cling to anything. And of course, that's a horrific image. Slicing your own throat. I think there's a...
She didn't, though.
She did.
No, it sliced her throat.
I think she sliced her throat.
No. We can go back when we're done. But she did not slice her own throat.
Poe often wrote about the frequent teeth in Poe as being buried alive. I think the one here is being eaten alive.
Jaws again. Both the head rolling out of the wreckage and the blood in the water.
I think there's a little bit of hope right here because after seeing the submersion in blood, this water appears clean and clear, which means maybe that they're close to getting out.
Without it.
The whole cleansing.
It's an hour 25 in. Something's got to happen.
After the credits are over, we'll go back and take a look at them. The slightest thing to see.
I think he ripped her throat open. Now it's clear she's covered in blood. It was John who pointed out she looks like Rousseau from Lost at this point.
She's also got the crazy eyes.
Yep. I think that's what does it.
Showing off her nicely shaved pits.
I was thinking, wow. How do you make that happen?
Maybe she gets waxed. Maybe she has an epilady. You think they were going to get out?
I did.
At this point? Mm-hmm. Did you have any sense of what was about to transpire?
Again, maybe it's just... having spent so many hours of my life watching Buffy, it doesn't seem reasonable that they won't make it.
I was thinking just between... are you even thinking about the dynamics between the two women at this point?
No, because I think then you open the door to them having to come to terms with living in the world knowing this deep, dark secret about each other. Right.
So, but why have it in the movie if you think it's not going to go anywhere at this point?
No, I think that having to figure out how to have a relationship when.
Okay, so you're
you
saying
know that she of course, stole your husband and killed a friend.
The shot to the nuts shows you that proves that they're male.
And do we just have one female, like one queen bee kind of thing?
I don't think we have enough information to know for sure, but there's, I guess, given the evidence, it seems like maybe it's one reading of what we see. I think that probably makes sense. It's kind of like a hive. Do you think the movie's unnecessarily gory? I mean, it's really revolting. I mean...
but I don't think it's unnecessarily gory. And that's kind of what I was thinking as I was talking about Friday the 13th. Was that that seems unnecessarily gory. This seems like gory incident to exactly what would happen.
That suggests that she's been planning this just by the... she knew how it was going to... for effect, how she was going to drop it out of her hand.
I don't think so. I think it's... I just buy that that's how it plays out. Yeah.
nice touch isn't killer.
Of course not. Beth, she killed. This bitch doesn't deserve it.
No, this bitch deserves worse.
Right. That's what I'm saying. She doesn't deserve to just be killed.
Our CGI shot. And I think it's a mistake. I don't think you need that shot. I think it looks bad too.
It does look bad, but you don't think.
No, I
would really, you prefer to have
we know
guys in suits, or would you rather just hear the screaming?
I just rather hear the screaming. I think we know what we're dealing with. And she even bears, she looks like Sissy Spacek and Carrie might have looked in 15 years after Carrie.
15 years after Carrie would have been 91.
I'm just thinking, she looks like Sissy Spacek and Carrie aged 15 years. With still having the blood on her arm. Emerging from the grave. I mean, and the overexposure of that shot is another thing that Jim Emerson pointed out there, and how it, you know, how having been underground that long, it's going to
blind you to be, yeah.
I think there's a really palpable sense of grief, and I think a realistic sense of grief in this movie. It's there when she's in the hospital. I think it's here. I think it's good acting. You might think it's easy to play that role, but I think
it's easy to overplay it. I think it's difficult to play it right.
And she's got the look in her eyes, and she's got it right.
Continuity person needs to be smacked around, though. That was a lot of mud and a lot of water.
Just try explaining this to the cops. I love the sense here that survival is almost meaningless in this context, that all the grief that she's dealt with or dealing with is vomiting is good. It's hard to get do well in movies. And
so that was the end of the American version.
You see Juno in the truck, and that's the end of the movie. I think during the credits we might talk. This is the version that was seen everywhere else,
and the version intended.
Yes, and it's a lovely shot. And the birthday cake comes back to. And look at the blueness of those eyes at that point. And just look at the shot from the birthday cake to her daughter. And just a pan. and it's really subtle. It doesn't emphasize what it's doing. But then when you pull back here, I think if you're the first time you watch it, you probably don't even realize that that's just a single shot right there, and how elegant it is.
That moment was when I understood how soul-crushing this movie is.
It's devastating. It's I think what I recognized watching that time was that the that when she emerges from the earth, and it's a little like Jacob's Ladder, she's imagining, she's making a decision of whether to continue or whether to give up.
I have to point out in the credits that there's actually one that has a name. I love that.
that there's a, that she's making a choice at that point. She's saying, I can continue to try to get out of here, and maybe I will, but she's sort of imagining what she has to deal with. And that's why that scare moment with Juno is important, I think, because she's first of all recognizing that all the grief she's going to have to deal with again. And the other thing is she's going to have to deal with the guilt of having killed Juno, or effectively having killed Juno.
I don't think she has any guilt at all about that. I think the grief is killing Beth. I think she is perfectly fine.
I think killing Beth was necessary, but I think that when you pull away and there's Juno in the truck, I think that that's a symbol of the guilt she would deal with if she got out. And I think when she realizes the kind of the crushing, when escaping is, how difficult escaping would be in terms of what comes next, I think that's when she checks out. And that's when she, and that's when you see the stuff with her daughter. Now, if that's your first time, and I, if you take out that last bit, if you just end it with seeing Juno, it's a bad movie. Because there are all these things, these loose ends that just don't go anywhere. And that's why it's, I'm angry about it, being left out. So, these are the credits. There's nothing much exciting in here. We're going to go back and take a look and see who slit the throat. What are the stakes?
I don't know.
Well, I've seen it 3 times in less than 2 months. What are your thoughts?
It gets easier to watch. I'm not as...
Are you bored by it?
No, I'm not bored by it. That's the interesting thing. I'm really not bored by it, but I'm not as freaked out. I gotta go before that. She's got the knife in her mouth. Claws are slashing.
You're correct. You win.
Sorry, I didn't bet now.
Yeah, you should be.
No, I'm not bored. But I think, I don't know that I have a whole lot left. I think 3 times in 2 months is plenty for me. You seem like you could watch it another 3 times tonight.
No, I think there... There is just something, I think it does a lot right. I think it is, I also think it's more complex than it would appear to be, it's pretty simple. It's pretty simple and straightforward in a lot of ways. But I think it's very complicated and complex symbolically, and I think we've touched on quite a few of the ways that it's pretty cool and pretty and and unique among horror films.
I can say that what woke me up the night after we watched this, so I think we watched this on a Friday night, and I woke up...
I never noticed the Rock Chick bumper sticker.
Yeah. Or Rock Chic, depending.
Ah, yes, true.
But I've always thought of it as Rock Chick
as back
well.
We're back near the ending again. She's vomiting, and there will be Juno in the truck.
What woke me up was the creepy crawlies. That's what woke me up out of my nightmare. What kept me up for the next 3 hours...
Look at the way her arm is bent back there.
Mm-hmm. What kept me up for the next 3 hours was the absolute devastation of this section, this scene, where I just couldn't get past how... what you do. Especially when it pulls back and there's that screaming. And you say that she's making a decision not to try and get out. I think it goes back to the claustrophobia for me. There's no way out. It's not a matter of choosing this.
No, it's not a matter of choosing whether to get out or not. It's a matter of whether to try to get out or to give up.
I
think she's just gonna stay there in that pose forever.
I agree with that, rather than to
take another step in an effort to try to find a way out.
But I think it's because there's an acknowledgement that there isn't a way out, and that's what kept me.
Well, they've been kind of fucked from the beginning, but that hasn't kept him from trying.
But she gets very realistic and says, "Okay, I'm fucked, and now I'm gonna." That's what kept me awake for so many hours after.
Thank you for listening to the commentary. We hope you enjoyed it. This is the first time we've actually done a movie that people might actually want to watch.
I suppose. Okay. And Ginger was very quiet. Thank you, Ginger.
She only flapped once. She was good dog Ginger, which means somebody replaced her.